and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So much crap under the bloody sofa that I'm trying to put the legs from this laptop closer. Yeah. So they go under. But there's like weights under there and stuff.
Why do you have weights under?
There's something always. Where else to fucking put them?
I'm assuming it's for like the jib and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because no offense, buddy, but I don't look at you and going, damn, you're swole.
So buff.
So buff. I am such a beefcake.
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 You are about to experience trash cinema.
Oh my god!
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Trash Tapes, when one man's trash is another man's treasure. And, oh boy, it's 2020, ladies and gentlemen. And
2020!
2020, and myself, Johan, who is the inflictor of pain, and my victim over here, Edward Harvey, are pretty much in a new zone, getting ready to go with this sort of semi-soft reboot of the podcast. I can't wait. I'm excited.
I'm very excited.
Indeed. Okay.
Hello, everyone.
Indeed. We're so excited. We didn't properly say our hellos. This is how we're running, people. Now, this episode is a bit more interesting than how we do it, because, like I said, we're doing a little bit of a soft reboot with this one. We're changing the format. We're changing how things are going, how things are flowing. And also, to start things off, we're going for a biggie, kind of a big one. And it's because, obviously, we've got the new Star Wars, the Rise of Skywalker.
Whatever it's called.
The Rise of Skywalker. Have you seen that yet? Have you seen that one?
I have seen it.
What do you think? All right.
It's a bit of a mess. It's like, it's not too bad, but the edit is such a weird thing. It flashes through, like, that's a scene, that's a scene, that's a scene. It's like a mishmash of lots of bits. It's a bit of a Frankenstein of a movie, really.
Yeah, it feels as if, like, those are three movies that could have been its own trilogy.
Yeah.
Shoved into, like, 2.5 hours. I was exhausted by the end because I felt I had to keep track. You know, I wish I had like a notebook, or like a crazy person's like notice board with strings, just so I can figure out what the plot of that one is. But I'll tell you something though, at least I had more plot than the movie we're about to talk about today.
Oh God, yeah.
So, in order to sort of kind of, because the Rise of Skywalker's come out, I told Ed, right, we need to start off with a bang. We need to get a new soft reboot in the bang, and you know what? We should do a Star Wars ripoff movie. There's loads of them, but I decided to say one that's more tolerable with air quotes, and that is Star Crash.
Yes.
The 1978 Italian Star Wars ripoff movie.
Right.
Split into two warring factions, our own
and the one ruled by the evil Count Zartan from the League of the Dark Worlds.
The Count has created a weapon. A weapon so vast, so huge, that it would take a whole planet to conceal it. You must sail to the haunted stars. Find the Count's secret planet and destroy it.
Oh boy. And we have a lot to say about it. What did you actually think about the film in general before we go into any details?
Well, like you've mentioned before, it's like there's not a lot going on in the movie in terms of plot, but yeah. it's got a lot going for it in terms of the effects.
Effects.
Yeah, in brackets.
In brackets.
In quotations.
Yeah.
And just a lot of weird, obscure stuff visually that just makes it unintentionally, like, amazing. Like, funny, like, yeah. Basically. It was what I'm saying. It's like, it's at times, it's difficult to get through. Because of the pacing of it and the fact that nothing's fucking going on at times.
Oh, that's so... Oh, we'll get into that in more detail, but Christ!
In general, overall, I think they did the best they could with what money they had.
Well, whatever money there was in here. We're going to break into some facts about that, but yeah. I mean, the movie itself is, the plot-wise, we won't be breaking down the plot per se. We're going to go for some of our best bits, but the plot is... very bare, it's very simple, but it's padded by lots and lots of travelling.
Yeah, I mean, in the opening sequence is like exteriors of spaceships, isn't it? Like scrolling for a long time. And what's great about it is they look like Airfix models. You know, like the model kits you used to get as a kid?
Yes.
And like, They took ages to build, loads of tiny bits in a box.
Yeah.
I think they just use those, like that type of thing, because they look exactly like toy spaceships.
It's something you find like in a toy store and you just paint it a little bit and put a string on it and go like, there's a spaceship.
Yeah.
It's kind of brilliant in that sense, but other than that, it's also like just this elongated moment, like the edits, for example, they're sometimes just cutting to a person staring at something for very long periods of time, or the traveling through space just seems to take, as if they were proud of those miniatures and said, this is so cool you need to see every minute of this coolness.
Yeah, and it just looks like filler at times, though, doesn't it? Because it's like, I don't know what to do for this bit. Let's just do a long sequence of an spaceship exterior for a long time. It's just going to keep going. How long is this spaceship?
I mean, I've seen people do jokes about it where it's just like, it's almost like they want to show the beginning of the ship right to the end of the ship.
Yeah.
But when you do that, you go quite quickly. This one just keeps, it's like slow traveling.
Yeah, is it movies like sort of Spaceballs and stuff do things like that?
Yeah, they did a joke about that. But you know what it feels like even more? Even though I don't know if the movie came out before or after this. Do you remember the very first Star Trek movie, the motion picture?
No.
Right. Star Trek the Motion Picture was the very first proper Star Trek movie. So it's the one with, you know, Captain Kirk, blah, blah, right? The movie's quite bad, and it reminds me a bit of that because the pacing's similar. Star Trek the Motion Picture really tried to be more like 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Where they really want to show off how wonderful and how cool space is by doing it very slowly. Like, there's a shot of the Enterprise that lasts, I swear to God, 7 minutes.
God's sake.
And you're sitting there going, we get it, it's the Enterprise, move on. Star Crash feels like that for me. It feels like whenever they're traveling, they, oh Christ, I'm seeing the Enterprise for another 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Right, let's get right into it. Let's go right into a little bit of facts, a little bit of history about Star Crash. But one thing I want to just play in the back, do it in the background. I know what we have here this time is like, we're going to do it differently to how we've done the podcast before, where I used to edit bits into the podcast.
Yeah.
But we're going to do some live reactions to stuff because Edward here has been very nice, at least for this episode, to make a soundboard.
Like that.
I can't wait. I love it. So we kind of feel like old. We kind of feel a little bit like old school radio DJs at the minute. And
remember this one from Leo Sayer? Nobody does.
Nobody does. No one remembers the stuff you're trying to recommend, DJ. Good grief. But I do know one of them that you have. As I describe a little bit about Star Crash, could you play the theme song?
I can.
Thank you. Okay, if you're not into the gang Star Wars vibes out of this, I don't know what's wrong with you, right? So,
I think it sounds like an old Western TV show.
More like the Lone Ranger. Hey!
The Waltons.
The Waltons. Right, so okay, you got me on a tizzy. Right, Star Crash is a 1978-1979 American space opera film directed by Luigi Cozzi, right? Now, Luigi Cozzi, obviously, we're noticing a little bit of trend with Italian directors, went on a completely different name for this movie. He went under the name Lewis Coates.
Okay. So a lot of the Italian directors do like to use different pseudonyms, don't they?
In America.
Yeah.
Because they feel like it would sell more.
Yeah.
I think. And it makes sense in that case. Right. It was written by Cozzi and a few other people as well. And it actually starred quite a few big people. And surprisingly so. One of the most noticeable ones is Joe Spinell. You then got David Hasselhoff.
Top billing.
Top billing. Hasselhoff.
Takes the top spot.
He does.
Into radio mode here.
I know. You are so into being DJ Ed. I so love this. Look at you with your machine.
Oh, I should have put a clip of like David Hasselhoff singing like on here. Like,
oh, Christ.
Some of his music.
Oh, dear. He's like, do you remember this tune from Hasselhoff? No one really cares. Right. And also, someone we're going to have to talk about at some point, Christopher Plummer's in this. Now, yes. This is Christopher Plummer here. Like, this is, you know, he's Christopher fucking Plummer, right? The fact that he got into this movie is fascinating, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to break down the plot too much, but a brief summary of the plot is basically this. An outlaw smuggler and her alien companion are recruited by the Emperor of the Galaxy to rescue his son and destroy a secret weapon by the evil Count Zarthon.
The Count.
The Count.
I love the Count.
Count Zarthon is fucking amazing. Absolutely amazing. That laugh in itself sums the fuck up, right?
You two are to prevent them from leaving this room at all costs. You will stay with them until the end. Kill them if you have to.
Ooh, the timing.
I love that. Kill them if you have to.
If you have to. You know, like, you know, it's a choice.
And the laughing just goes on and on sometimes.
He's pure manic cheese. Basically, the best way to describe Count Zarthon is he's a pure pantomime villain, and I love him for it. It's kind of the reason why I kind of fall in love with this movie. A few little facts about this movie as we go along, right? So the movie itself actually had a semi sort of decentish budget,
about a million or something.
Yeah, about $1 million in '70s money. So that wasn't too bad.
Mm.
All right, wasn't too bad at all.
Mm.
One other thing to basically mention is the production was interesting. Okay, Luigi Cozzi actually stated that this is not a science fiction movie, it's a science fantasy movie.
Okay.
Right off the bat, so he's automatically saying, don't call this a science fiction. He's already calling it a science fantasy, a space opera. So we're looking on the lines of Star Wars, and we're looking like Barbarella, Queen of the Galaxy. We're seeing that kind of spectrum of weird here. Okay.
Yeah.
Especially, I actually argue, if you actually like Barbarella, Queen of the Galaxy, you might actually kind of like this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Stella Starr is very sort of Barbarella.
It's very much Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
Like, in just, you know, with the sexy everything.
Let's just talk about her outfits for a moment.
Oh, sure.
Her costume changes. And okay. It's just like, because she doesn't need to be that sexy all the time, but she is. Just like, not practical.
Okay, I'm going to have to say something about this outfit. Right, so basically, at the beginning of the movie, we have our lead actress, the hero, Stella Starr, played by Caroline Monroe, right? She is basically sexy Han Solo, but let's not lie, okay? She moans a lot.
Yeah.
Not in a sexy way either. Although, no. Kinda. But point being is she
I have got a clip of that.
You got a clip? Go on.
You'll pay for this. Don't make us kill you. Come on.
Right.
Yep.
Stop.
Yeah, right. No, moaning escape. Indeed.
That is a Bikini Bay battle.
God, so ridiculous. So, okay. So, basically, the Caroline Monroe character, Stella Starr, actually, as the movie goes along, she's actually, at the beginning, sexy, but fully dressed.
Yes.
And then by halfway through the movie, she's literally just wearing a bikini. She's losing clothing as the movie goes along. At one point, I think it was a bit where she gets kidnapped by the space police, and then she's put into this weird ass mine where she's dropping phantom power orbs. It's so stupid.
It makes sense. When she gets sentenced by this weird brain guy
in a jar. It's like a weird brain guy in a jar.
Yeah, who sounds like this.
As for you, Stella Starr, having considered all the arguments, studied all the videotapes, the accusations,
all the videotapes,
we condemn you to forced labor for life in the penal colony of Nocturne the Second.
What? It's like he's like reading his lines from a piece of paper, and he's only just been given the paper.
He just realised, okay, all right, you have to say this. You're now officially a brain in a jar. Enjoy this. Give a sentence to a bikini babe. It's so bizarre.
It kind of makes sense that she has the weird bikini at that point because she's a slave.
Yeah, but no one else is.
No, but it's like, I suppose it's to. I was going to say it's because of the Princess Leia bikini, but that came later.
That came later?
Yeah, so did that inspire the bikini of Leia?
Are you saying that George Lucas saw this movie and said, yes, more bikini, please?
He might have.
Star Wars needs more bikini.
As we sit on the topic of the slave section.
Yeah.
Do you remember the slave driver? You could hear in the background, like, sort of...
Yes, and get back to it!
Can you remember? He sounds like this.
Move! Let's go! Will you step it up? Here, you can move! Careful with that radium! Will you move?
He's just shouting for, like, no reason. He's not really aiming it or shouting at anyone. He's just saying shit.
He's a perpetual angry man. He's just, like, constantly angry all the time.
I kind of love it. It's preposterous, right?
Like, would you like a cup of tea? Yes! Yes! I would like a cup of tea!
I need something now! Give it to me now! Give it to me all the time! Ridiculous. Love it. But it's from that point onwards, once he's in the mine, where Stella Starr as a character both blossoms, but also wears less clothing.
Yeah.
Because halfway through the film, by literally a point, she's wearing nothing but a leather bikini. And this is clearly the director's choice, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then halfway through, and then you might notice as well, in the second half of the movie, she's suddenly wearing sort of like a bizarre see-through sort of like suit.
Mm.
So she's still in a bikini, but she's still fully covered in like a mesh suit.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that.
Okay.
So Caroline Monroe was originally going to wear a skimpy leather bikini throughout the entire movie.
Even in the winter set, snowy scene.
The whole scene. But the American studio executive insisted that the writer-director Luigi Cozzu Cozzy, sorry, have Monroe wear less provocative clothing in the second half of the movie because they thought the film would have problems being broadcast on network television.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, she's just a sexy woman, even when she's fully clothed.
Even when she's fully clothed, boobs and butts, right, are all on display. And if she was wearing just nothing but the leather bikini, I can totally imagine sees it. We can't show this on TV. In fact, it's still heavily edited for TV, at least the middle section. Like, the when they eventually get to the island of the crazy Amazon women, that is edited for television quite dramatically.
Yeah.
But, again, we're jumping over ourselves and going all over the place.
That's covering fire from there.
So at the beginning, we've got Stella Starr, sexy Han Solo. Right, smuggler, so we know that.
Yeah.
And her companion friend. Her alien companion called Acton.
Acton.
Do you have something about Acton?
I've got... What's this?
Go. It's your duty. You must live.
Yes. So dramatic.
I can't leave you. You're the only human-like friend I've ever had.
What a lie.
You never die.
Spoiler.
Oh, Jesus, sorry. But Acton is... okay, so bizarre. Oh,
I have these stitches because Stella Starr goes, oh, come on, you never die.
You're like, you never do this to me. Don't die on me. Like, I've never done it before. So Acton is kind of the Luke Skywalker of this, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I want to wait until you get more into like the Hoff character because I've got those two are too similar.
They are, but I'll say one thing. I actually would argue that Acton's supposed to be a Luke Skywalker part because he has sort of weird force like powers, but he doesn't explain what his powers are, what they do, and are completely irregular and inconsistent throughout the entire movie.
He's got too many powers. He's like Jesus Christ.
He's like Jesus. He's like Superman. But here's the thing with them. Even with them, right, even with Jesus and Superman, it's used more than once, so he knows he has control over it. It seems like with him, it all this stuff only happens once every time. Like, it says, like, oh, I can do this now. Do, 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 do. Okay, brilliant. And it says, oh, now I can do this now. Well, like, I can thaw out, like, a woman smuggling in ice. Oh, I can now kind of semi-levitate. Oh, I can kind of do this.
Basically, if it's relevant to the plot, he will have that power.
Exactly. And also, one thing to mention about Acton, which is amazing, is he has the most amazing head of hair. The best, blonde afro you will ever see in your flipping life.
But don't you think this is another reason why he's too similar to the Hoff? Because the Hoff also has a nice curly afro.
He does. When he appears later on in the movie with this gorgeous afro. Wow. This definitely proves it was the 70s, basically, right? This proves it was the 70s, and perms and afros were all in, baby. All in. Kind of love it.
Yeah.
We then got the two police officers that are chasing them, right? Those, we've got Thor and L.
Mm.
Right, so L is a robot. Now, just to demonstrate what I'm talking about, L has the weirdest choice for an accent, I think, in the history of robotdom. Do you have a robot... clip.
I have one that's very appropriate.
Please.
It's so nice to be turned on again.
And how?
Allow me.
Same old chauvinist robot.
Pretty much!
I burst out laughing when I was watching and I heard, so nice to be turned on again. I said, that'll be all the bikini bays, mate.
Of course. So L is a southern... pervert robot.
I know what they're going for with him.
Well, like a C-3PO.
Well, it's because basically Star Wars is like a space western, isn't it?
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
And he went a bit too far and actually made him sound like a cowboy.
But he looks like the robot you'd find in like Lost in Space.
Well, he doesn't actually look like a robot at all. He just looks like a man in a suit, doesn't he? He doesn't move like a robot. His suit is like rubbery, isn't it? Like,
yeah, but it's clearly their attempt at like the C-3PO or the R2-D2.
Yes,
right. But yes, we have L. Who, personally, he's my favourite character because he's so inappropriate. Like, he's constantly hitting on Stella Star all the time. And it's... But at times where you don't think it's appropriate, like at times where they're investigating the crashes and like the starship crashes and all this kind of stuff and everything else, and he just hits on her constantly. I'm like, stop! Like, stop!
And she says stuff like in the clip, same old chauvinist robot.
Look at you, I'm so used to being treated like an object. Well done, you... Who programmed this robot to make him such a chauvinistic pig? You know? We also then have Thor. Thor is basically a blue-skinned, like, chief of police.
Yeah.
Okay, because the whole point is at the very, very beginning of the movie, Stella Star and Acton are like being chased by these two, technically space police.
Yeah, space police.
So you got R2-D2. I'm not sure what Thor is supposed to be. Thor seems like a little bit everywhere.
Thor, look, he looks like an alien, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's an alien. He's a blue-skinned humanoid.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't have any powers or anything like that. Nothing makes him like really alienish. He's just blue-skinned.
Yeah.
And in terms of the Star Wars canon, I don't know where he would properly fall into.
Is he supposed to be like the Chewbacca, but like he's not hairy?
Wow.
Because he's like, he's in their ship.
Yeah.
And he's like their sort of companion, but he, yeah.
No, but later on in the movie, we realise that he's not the good guy. So, because Thor ends up betraying them. So,
Thor and Acton have a very good fight.
Oh boy. Oh, you got something for the fight? Okay.
How long will the delay be?
I think a very long time. You shouldn't try taking off without asking me first.
This time I'll make sure you're dead.
That's Thor. This fight is absolutely hilarious.
I love it.
It's a proper Star Trek, like, TV series fight.
This is the thing. It's trying to be Star Wars, but all it reminds me is early Star Trek. Yeah. Oh, this is a bit where he's getting crushed into the machine. And then finally he realises, oh shit, I have force powers. And there's just whales on it.
Yeah, that what you're hearing there is laser eyes.
Laser eyes, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely brilliant. I kind of just... Mwah. So, one interesting thing about this fight is that it was all improvised on the spot.
You can tell.
It actually says in the notes that there was no choreography. It was just them making it up as it went because the director didn't actually have any idea what the fight was. He didn't know. All he knew that laser beams were involved.
No one can survive these deadly rays.
At this point, Thor is shooting him with a laser beam. This is how him using his mind powers to kill him. It's ridiculous. The lasers in particular are very much like he's standing there and it's like very drawn on and he's just going, it's like, no, clear. It's like, you should die from these death rays. And he's sitting there going like, dude, after a couple, stop shooting him. It's not working.
I'm telling you, Acton, he's too powerful. He's too powerful. He's godlike.
He is OP. He's so OP.
Thing is, though, if he was supposed to be the Luke Skywalker character, there's no arc. You know how Luke trains to be a Jedi?
Yeah.
You're just thrown in with these people. They've already got the powers. They've already got, like...
Yeah.
They're already at their peak, really. So they've got nowhere to go, like, in the...
But then you say that, but then Acton is the one with the lightsaber.
Yes.
So he's totally Luke Skywalker.
Which, by the way, the lightsaber,
yeah,
it sounds like this.
Sounds like a...
That's when he either puts it on, yeah, or takes it down, turns it off.
It sounds like a slide whistle.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I love it. So when all that's happening, at some point, in this sort of situation, right, they get, well, they, I don't say they get a phone call, but they get, but they get an interaction. They get an interaction by Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
Who is the Emperor of the Galaxy. What a title.
Yeah.
Now, interesting thing about Christopher Plummer, a couple few things about how we got the role and what happened to him. So, number one, Christopher Plummer was paid $10,000 a day.
Right.
With a budget of about $1 million. That goes pretty quick, right? He was only there for 2 days, though. So it wasn't that expensive, right? There's actually, you're thinking, like, Christopher Plummer's quite a big-known actor. How the hell did he decide to pick this role? I'm not joking. He said Christopher Plummer admitted that he did the film so he could take a chance to visit Italy for free.
Right.
All right, because his scenes were apparently all shot in 2 days, and that's it. Mm. One which is the hologram sequence, which that is, it's, you got something?
I come to you because my faithful robot L has told me that you,
beautiful voice,
are the only one who can save us.
He sounds so
tired.
You know,
you must be the best pilot in the whole galaxy.
The sad piano is brilliant.
He sounds so tired.
Stella.
He sounds like he just got the script first thing in the morning.
Two warring factions.
And say, just read this.
And the one ruled.
There's little Captain Kirk pauses, which I like.
Which is what we're saying, like, this feels more like Star Trek than Star Wars.
Recently begun to receive troublesome reports from our spies among the League. They have informed us.
This is an exposition dump, completely.
A new, limitless weapon. A weapon so vast.
So vast!
So huge that it would take a whole planet to conceal it.
They're all channeling William Shatner here.
Did they find the planet?
The ship came so close. So close.
So close.
To discovering the Count's secret.
But yet so far.
And it was suddenly attacked by a horde of unknown monsters.
When he's saying these lines, the characters are just looking at him like they love him.
They look, they're looking like there's nothing there, and there's everything there. Their expressions on all four characters are ridiculous. It's like a blank space, but in awe at the same time. How does that work?
To the haunted stars.
Yes.
You must find that ship. Find the Count's secret planet and destroy it.
There we go.
So it's like, it reminds me of like a video game. You know, when you get set a quest at the beginning of a game.
Totally. This is very much like this is where the fantasy element really kicks in. See, when it comes to Christopher Plummer, he mentioned that he wanted to do it for free. In an interview, he actually said this, and I love this quote, and I had to share it with everybody, right? He was only there for 2 days. Who? Picture it. For 2 days, $20,000. Good money. Good money.
70s as well.
Good money. Goddamn good money. So, Christopher Plummer said in an interview, he said, "Give me Rome any day. I'll do porno in Rome as long as I get to Rome. Getting to Rome was the greatest thing that happened to me on that movie."
Yeah. My memory of him, my strongest memory of him, is in The Return of the Pink Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays like the thief, doesn't he? The sort of charismatic thief.
Yeah.
The jewel thief.
Oh, yeah, I remember him now.
Yeah.
I remember from that. I mean, I remember Christopher Plummer more later. Mm. Now, I've stumbled him more later in his later years, where he's doing really good roles, recently. Like, wasn't he recently, in Knives Out, I think it was?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So, you see, he's so good now that to see him in the 70s in this schlock.
He just, back then, he was just anything he got paid a decent amount for. Yep. Just I'll have it. I'll do that.
Like, it might not have been huge then, but, or huge as it was now, but still, $20,000 for 2 days of filming and being in Italy for free.
And you can tell, actually, that he wasn't there long, because when he is delivering a line, he just makes it count, doesn't he? Like, those massive monologues.
Yeah, he's almost like, I bet he's maybe had an argument with a director, say, "Look, I'm only going to do this once." I'm only going to do this once. Maybe twice if I'm feeling generous. So he is basically the emperor of the galaxy. So he's the one giving the message and saying, go on this quest. You have to do this for me, right? And just as you probably heard there, even though we were laughing all over it, is that he said that there was a starship with his son on it. With his son on it, who got attacked by Count Zarth Arn, right? By some weird sort of bizarre red dots. Okay. He didn't say I've been attacked by red dots, but the movie shows that the crew at the very beginning of the movie just got attacked by red floating dots.
There's lots. The version I saw was quite low quality.
Yeah,
and there's lots of red. Whenever there's lots of red on screen, like lighting or like. It just kind of looks so blurry. You couldn't see what was going on. It was just like so much red. Like they were inside like a jello mold, like jelly mold.
Oh my. Everyone's like grabbing their head going, ah! And everything was just red covered. Loads of red dots and filters all over the place. Apparently these space red dots are sort of like this lethal. It's like Zarth Arn's lethal weapon.
Yeah.
Speaking of Zarth Arn, we need to talk about the Count. So the Count is based. The Count was played by Joe Spinell. And oh my sweet God, isn't he just the campest thing on the planet?
He's like, it's obviously, he's not playing like the Darth Vader character, but it's like, Ming the Merciless from Flash Gordon.
Yes.
But even more camp.
Even more camp than Ming the Merciless, right? Yeah. And look, I mean, here's a weird thing. Like, Flash Gordon would be totally fine for an episode of the Trash Tapes, to be frank. But even then, like, it's so fun looking at Flash Gordon and stuff. Here, I almost feel sorry for half the cast because they're trying so hard.
I think he was having so much fun with it, though.
Yeah.
You could tell that he was like a pantomime villain type, like, and it must be fun to play that kind of camp evil villain. He's doing the laugh, and one of my favorite bits with him was when a couple of times in the movie he reacts to bad news, like one of his like soldiers comes in,
of course,
and says that something bad, and like it's like, I don't know, like the ship is approaching, and he just like reacts like,
what?
What?
He says that loads of times, and he's just like, I can imagine him, like, just imagine if you knew him, right?
Yeah.
And you were like, I've just got back from co-op, and they didn't have any Mars bars like you wanted. They only had Snickers. And he's like,
what?
it's like you could go anything like this. You could do very bad news, like, I'm very, very sorry to tell you, but your grandma died.
What?
Or you go the other way, go like, I'm sorry, but we've run out of coffee.
What?
I could do that all day. But.
I know you could. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's. I'll admit that he's great in it because of his pure cheese, right? And I think what I like him more because of his cape. Okay, actually, more than anything else. He's got like a pure, almost like a Dracula-like cape.
Oh, and when he delivers a big line, he like flaps his cape and walks off, and then maybe does a laugh as he's walking off.
Like, who wouldn't? Like, this is the thing that I totally get. I understand. If I had a cape, I would be doing that all the time.
Yeah.
I'll be flinging around. I'll be doing all the swooshes with it. I'll be doing dramatic pauses and doing an evil laugh behind it. I totally would.
But, I mean, he's got, like, really good lines, though, to be able to, like... I think he's in his right mind to pull off the cape flapping. I mean, he says stuff like this.
By sunset, I'll be the new emperor. And I will be the master of the whole universe.
That's just the master of the universe.
Look, at the end of the day, who doesn't want to be the emperor of the galaxy, the master of the universe? You know what's interesting, actually? Joe Spinell, who was basically Count, was also the dialogue director on the set.
Okay.
Because remember, this was an Italian production.
Mm.
So a lot of it was, half the crew was Italian. Some of the cast was Italian. And so it was up to him to sort of rewrite dialogue in English to some of the English-speaking members of the crew, but also when they had to dub it. Now,
okay.
Did you notice that there were some weird dubbing issues throughout the whole movie?
Oh yeah, I mean it's just like, but you always get with these kind of movies.
Mm.
Often the whole thing is like ADR, isn't it?
Yeah, especially with Italian movies, because Italian movies already kind of have this structure. All movies from Italian movies kind of follow this, where they focus primarily on getting the film sorted out. And what they do is they get local Italian actors and actresses to say English lines.
Yeah.
So obviously they don't speak English very well. So obviously then they dub it over with other actors.
And I'd heard that it was because sound equipment's so expensive. It was like sound recording equipment, like set recording.
Oh,
like,
totally.
So they often it was just because of the budget as well.
Mm. Yeah, most of it was for the budget. And here's the thing as well, actually. Only 4 members of the entire crew were able to come back and have their own voices for the English dub of the movie.
Mm.
Everyone else were dubbed by different people, including Stella Starr.
Ah.
So Stella Starr, what you hear, that sultry voice of hers, is not her. It's by a woman called Candy Clark. Who actually was the wife or the girlfriend at the time of Major Garthoff, who was Acton.
All right.
But the reason why they were the only 4 is because the post-production budget was so tight. And it makes sense because, weirdly, even though the movie looks cheap, I can clearly see they spend the majority of the budget on sets.
Yeah.
Or going on location, because they went to several different locations. They went to, very much like Star Wars, went to places like Morocco, went to Hollywood, went to places in Rome, went to other places in the Mediterranean. They actually travelled around.
Yeah.
So they had very little budget on post-production. So basically, L had his voice changed.
Yeah.
Stella Starr had her voice changed because it would have been too expensive to fly them back in.
Right.
So everyone else was dubbed.
What was the effects budget, though?
Do you think? Well, to be honest, the effects budget might not have been great.
I read that the effects, like, the original effects artist dropped out.
Mm, yes, he did. He did, so they had to sort something out.
Just like the guy they got to replace him just did a mock job, didn't he? Like, oh, I don't know, I'll put this here a little bit.
Well,
there.
At the same time, like I said, the post-production budget was tight. So probably sat there going like, okay, I'm ready to do this. I want to do all these things. It's like, oh, we didn't have much time on set to do this kind of stuff. And some things on set they didn't have to do and didn't have the money for it. Oh, we'll run with it.
Yeah.
We'll do lasers in post. Mm. They had no money for post. So this is why all the laser beams look ridiculously cheap. Oh my god, it looks so cheap. It's one of my favourite things in it.
But I love the sound effects and stuff. So sometimes I can forgive, like, visuals if the sound is good. And it's like, it's cheesy sound, but it's really good laser gun sounds.
Like, even with that, I think, oddly enough, the sound effects and the music kind of save this movie a bit.
Yeah, the music I read as well is John Barry.
It's John Barry.
Like the famous James Bond composer.
Yeah.
Like all the early James Bond movies were done by John Barry, weren't they?
Yeah, and as a little fact, the filmmakers were highly reluctant to allow John Barry to see the movie beforehand in case he decided to quit the project before.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, imagine you saw this and go, I ain't going to do the music for this. What are you talking about? So they kind of signed the deal first and held him back longest possible to watching the movie, which is why the music itself almost felt like you can watch it on its own. It didn't really feel like the music kind of linked with a lot of the movie.
No, they just slapped it in here and there, didn't they? Like,
yeah.
And most of it's just sound alikes of the Star Wars, obviously.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Do you know who was originally going to be the composer?
No.
Another famous Italian composer. Who do you think I'm talking about? Ennio Morricone.
Oh.
He was originally offered the opportunity, but he turned...
And that would have been even like more like the Western kind of thing.
Yes,
yeah.
But he turned it down the moment he read the script.
Because the script was probably like one page.
He's sat there going, what are you talking about? What is this? So yeah, the music's actually really cool. I think the music is actually really good. There was a limited run of it on vinyl for quite a while ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, John Barry's really good, so.
Yes, so I think he basically said, like, look, yeah, I'm John Barry, right? As like, look, I did Star Crash, okay? But I'm proud of my work. So put it out there. So yeah, there was a brief run of it on vinyl. So
there's like really good bits where I haven't got a clip of it, but in sometimes a dramatic moment, it goes like dun 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 like that.
Yeah, you can kind of sense that he's kind of like semi rehashing some of the stuff he did on James Bond movies,
yeah.
Like doing a few stings here and there, but it's a good soundtrack, and the sound effects are all the kind of sci-fi cheese you're looking for. When the Emperor finally has told the gang, right, go and find my son's ships, right, they seem to go on like this weird MacGuffin trail. Like, they seem to try and find different things, and on the same time they need to find the Emperor's planet. So a little bit like Rise of Skywalker, there's loads of MacGuffins they have to try and chase in order to get to the bad guy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I kind of just have little things about Rise of Skywalker that I don't want to get into.
Oh, everybody does.
Everyone. Now, the move. Okay, just to say very quickly before we get onto this, Rise of Skywalker isn't a bad movie. It's just not a good movie. That makes sense?
Yeah. I mean, it does. The thing is, a lot of Star Wars nerds would like sort of lay into it like proper. Like, but the thing is, if you're not the biggest Star Wars geek ever, you can just appreciate it like for what it is, and it's just okay, you know. It's just not terrible, but it's not like I wouldn't send a lynch mob after it, you know what I mean? It's
I know.
Just a bit of a mess, but it, you know, it's got some decent moments. We're not doing a review of that anyway, but
It's got decent moments and stuff like that, but basically it's got that thing, right? But the plot's very similar, I argue, because it's a bunch of people trying to travel to places, dropping to different planets, trying to find the Emperor's planet.
Yeah.
Which is very much like Emperor Palpatine trying to find his planet. It's so bizarre. Watch this again and watch Rise of Skywalker. Like, oh my god, the plot's so similar.
I will say that I did like how it looked like all the gothic cinematography of Palpatine.
Yeah,
like all the weird kind of like flickering like lighting on him and stuff. Yes. It was like so goth. It was awesome.
Yes.
Like Nosferatu. Or
and you know what? The sad thing. I think this movie. I'll talk about Star Crash now, right? It needed an Emperor Palpatine. You need a sort of cheese like, yes, yes.
Yeah, because the Count was too likable, wasn't he? He was a villain, but he was really likable.
He was too cheesy.
Yeah.
And you need something pure evil, and we're missing that. So, on their travels, basically, they go to different planets trying to find coordinates from all the little pods that escape from the ship to find the Emperor's planet.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Now, they find three different planets. So let's go for each one. First of all, let's do the one we were talking about for most of the thing, the Amazonian women planet.
The best one.
Best planet. The best fucking planet. And it's because it's so blatantly obvious what it's trying to be. It's clearly there for the boobs. There's no reason why that's the case. So Elle and Stella Star go to the land of beautiful women, basically, get kidnapped by these beautiful women in bikinis, and then talk to the queen, which is, I think, Coralina, I believe, who is the queen of the planet, queen of the Amazonian women, who somehow in cahoots with the Count, but also hates everybody of the Count, and it's some kind of prophecy, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, I didn't understand the association. Like, I was just, to be honest, I was distracted by the fact that she was just too sexy.
I know.
And she her speaking voice was really, like,
very
sensual.
Sensual. The bit which is random is that L sort of gets... So L and Stella Star get kidnapped by the Amazonian women. And the thing is, they don't even... It's not even much of a fight at the beginning. Because they're just at the... Yeah, do you want to play something? Look like he's about to play something.
I want to play again.
You'll pay for this.
Kill you, damn it!
Come on!
Do you know what? It's even worse when it's just audio.
There's no escape.
Because all you hear is the sexual groans and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, although I'll say something, the kicks, can I just say, like, it looks like she did the majority of her own stunts, right? And...
Oh, she's a badass, yeah.
I mean, like, she's good. Mm. I mean, the fights are terrible, but she's at least pulling, like, high kicks and attempting to do, like, cool punches and stuff. All in basically a bikini and high heel fuck boots, right? Because yeah. Those are really high stilettos. But the thing is, she barely puts up a fight when a bunch of Amazonian women arrive at the beach, right? And then when she gets kidnapped, Elle magically disappears. Was like Elle disappear for some reason, or was he like put in a cage or something? I don't know what happened.
Don't they shoot him?
Yeah, they shoot him,
and he kind of like, so I think he's out of commission for a bit, isn't he?
Yeah, he shoots him, but takes the robot in with them.
Yeah,
and then takes Stella Star, and you see her barely struggling, but she looks like she's struggling really hard. But it's like and to talk to the queen of the Amazonian women. But before that happens, then she's like, it's like, don't talk to us this way. We're here to kidnap you. It's like, well, you already kidnapped me. We're already in the palace. And then she pulls up a fight. Like, do. And it takes her to the queen. And the queen's saying the whole spiel like it's a prophecy, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's nonsense here. This is pure nonsense. And then Elle comes in and says the most misogynistic shit. It's like, don't make me try and hurt you. And it's like saying, wait a minute, you're already such a pig to Stella Star. And yet you're like slightly more polite to these Amazonian women you haven't met who are probably more scantily clad.
I mean, this is like the time it was set, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You get like when men were like chauvinistic back then, it was funny, wasn't it? It was a joke. And it's like, oh, yeah. Male chauvinist pig, you know, like, ooh.
Whatever. But yeah. Yeah, and then that whole sequence happens. They find out that a little clue went and go off somewhere else. And this is the movie itself. They go through different planets trying to find more information about it, right? And so they go to the second planet, which is the ice planet.
Mm.
Where literally, what's the point of the ice planet? They literally just find something. Just before they do it, they just freeze to death.
Before we go fully onto the ice planet, I want to talk about the massive, giant... Like, you know, the leader of the Amazon women.
Yes.
Like, sets this, like, guardian, as you call it.
Oh, my God, a golem. It's like this golem.
And I'll tell you what it looks like. It looks like a silver, like, blow-up doll.
Yes.
It's like, absolutely the size of a building.
Yes.
And it's animated, like... It doesn't know what it's doing. It's kind of like stumbling all over the place, like really jerky. And it's like, oh God, I don't know why I'm this big. I can't handle it.
Oh my God, it's all over the place. It's like it suddenly discovered sentience and has no idea what to do with it.
So there, it's kind of like they're running away from it, but it kind of doesn't, like, it looks like it doesn't know what it's doing. So it probably won't attack them.
It's kind of terrifying. Now, here's the thing, though, just to be sure, and this happens quite a bit, a lot of the robots other than L are stop motion.
Mm.
And it's because the director was a huge fan of Ray Harryhausen.
Yeah, I did actually adore the stop motion animation. I thought it was charming. I love stop motion. I think it's like, it's a lost art. It's not really done much now.
Yeah, it's not done like this, no.
And I think it looks so great. Even though it's jerky, I really appreciate stop motion.
And here's the thing. This is the reason why he went for the Ray Harryhausen approach. Luigi Cozzi actually had an interview. He basically was talking about how, at the time, people said, you're doing this because it's very similar to Star Wars and stuff like that, right? Cozzi said this. Cozzi has never seen the film He's never seen the film, but apparently he saw the novelization of the film in his library. He read it and began working on his own version. But then later on in another interview, he said that he wasn't at all inspired by Star Wars, and it was all a coincidence because he wrote the script before the movie came out. So basically, he read the script, I think he wrote the script in 1977, just a little bit before the movie came out, apparently. Right. So he's contradicting his own terms.
Yeah.
But they said his main influence was Sinbad.
Okay.
He wanted to do Sinbad in space.
Yeah.
And this is right, the Ray Harryhausen.
Doesn't everybody?
Doesn't anyone want to do Sinbad in space, right? But I love that's the thing. Is like, I want to do Sinbad, but in space. And so this is what the movie is. And to be honest, I get that. Watching this is sort of like the adventures of Sinbad, but in space. It's like Barbara, the Queen of the Galaxy. It's like Star Trek. The only problem, the reason why it's feeling so much like Star Wars is because there are some blatantly obvious things that are nicked from Star Wars, like the lightsaber, you know, the Luke Skywalker-like character, the bloody count that Zarth on. It sounds like Darth. Come on, you're holding a little bit too much, yeah? But I feel like it just happened to be bad timing. If Star Wars didn't come out, maybe two things happened. This movie may not never existed, or this would have been the new Star Wars. So, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah. But I suppose it's like anyone would say that, wouldn't they? You know, if something... Because the trouble is as well, sometimes you can write something. You can have an idea before something else comes out. And you'll think, no, I came up with that. I came up with that idea. But then subconsciously, if it's a film, when you go to make it, you'll be inspired by stuff that's around you subconsciously a lot of the time. And Star Wars, you couldn't avoid it, could you?
Like, Star Wars was all over the place in the 70s. Like, 70s, it was the movie.
Yeah. And it's like, and you've got to, surely, you've got to just do it for the dollar, cashing in on it. Because it's like, it's so big that, okay, if I take some of those influences in my movie, people are going to love it, surely.
So this is why I think he tried to contradict himself a little bit. Yeah. Because clearly maybe he did find a novelization and wanted to do his own version of Star Wars because he never saw the film. He read the book, liked it. Weirdly enough. But I think also as well, like, it was produced for an American studio. They're looking for something big. Star Wars came out. The studio probably asked him to do something like this. He wrote basically stuff he knew, so Sinbad, Barbarella, all that kind of stuff, and make a movie out of it. It just happens to be in the same kind of fantasy genre that Star Wars was, and Star Wars did it better.
Yeah.
Basically. Even though, like, some things are purely ripped off.
But to defend it, I mean, like, Star Wars had a ridiculous amount of money to work with. But how much more did they have, like, with Star Wars?
Here's the thing, like, Star Wars was a gamble as well when it came out at the time. Like, people didn't think it was going to be a big thing. In fact, Star Wars the very first draft of the edit was considered terrible. And it was saved in the edit.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, when I go back and watch the original Star Wars now, I find it a bit slow. Do you?
A little bit.
It's like I really like Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi is not bad.
Yeah.
But like the first movie, there's bits of it that are okay.
Well, to be honest though, the thing is, it's a little slow, but I think to be honest, it's still a decent pace. Like, stuff happens like every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Unlike Star Crash, which it takes 20 minutes to get somewhere. Oh my god. They've gone to the first planet, now going to the second planet, the ice planet, where they literally spend the majority of time just frozen to death.
Yeah.
I think that's literally it. Like, do they find anything else interesting on the ice planet?
I can't remember what they're looking for. They're just walking around in the snow.
They're basically finding clues and coordinates and information from each planet to guide them to the planet, basically following the pods. Basically, each pod has a coordinate, and he believes that one of those three pods has to lead to the Emperor's planet.
Yeah.
So they go to the second one, which is the ice planet, and they find the pod and everything else, and it's all missing.
But it just seems like a plot device to get them trapped. But
literally trapped.
The backstab from Thor.
Yeah, because this is the thing. They are there. Actor never leaves his ship for most of this movie because he is like he's also Chewie, which is weird. He's Luke Skywalker and Chewie.
He's got the hair for it.
Oh my god, it's such gorgeous hair. And so he's the navigator. So he's also Chewbacca, right? So he never leaves the ship. But then this is where he gets a whole backstabbing thing from Thor, which we played the amazing fight scene from.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's took quite a long clip. I don't need to play it again.
No, we don't need to play it again. But it's, honestly, that clip's amazing because it's just so ridiculous, right? But while that's happening, since something bad's happened while these two are on the way, they basically fall. They fall. They have a bit of a conflict, whatever it is. Elle and Stella freeze to death.
Yeah,
Elle just sort of collapses, and it's kind of cute. In a weird way, because they're holding hands while this is happening?
Yeah, because Al keeps her alive by... Because he's a robot, obviously. Yeah. He can, regulate her temperature, I think, via... Yeah. So there's that connection. So it's sweet they're holding hands, but there is the purpose of why he's holding her hand. It's he's keeping her alive, basically, isn't he?
Yeah. But at the same time, he's sitting there going, come on, you're just macking on her, aren't you? You're so thirsty for her. Oh, my God, stop being so thirsty. Although admittedly, Stella Star is a very, very tall glass of water. Oh my god!
But she's really sort of she says some really nice things about him at that point, doesn't he? And all he ever does is really sort of he's dead perving on her and stuff.
100%.
And she's like, "Oh, you're the best companion I've ever had.
You're my best robot friend."
Yeah.
So at some point, after the backstab of Thor. Acton finds Stella and Elle and says, oh my fucking god, why are you frozen? Puts her in, and using his force mind powers melts her, basically.
Again, he's like with these Superman powers, just whatever's relevant to the situation he'll have a power for.
I know, and it's brilliant and also very frustrating. But great thing about it is that basically I actually kind of love it because it's so cheesy, the constant dissolves of how she's melting.
Oh god, that's like when you first discover like cross fades and stuff in editing programs. And look at all these effects I can do. I can blend that to that. And it's so many shots just overlapping.
I love it. It's so 70s, so cheesy, so fun. This thing is, even with all the slow bits we've mentioned, when it finally gets something done, it's really fun and really cheesy and so stupid. So now she's thawed out. She realizes we need to go to the third pod. The third pod will tell us where the Emperor's planet is.
Yeah.
They go to this place. And this place is just filled with cavemen. evil cavemen. It feels like, for example, I love this, because basically the director's thinking right, we've got three planets. What kind of three planets we do? We'll just do different movies, basically.
This is 2001 Space Odyssey, isn't it? I kind of felt like that, I needed to be a monolith somewhere in the background.
Oh my god. Just imagining at the end going, throw the bone. They end up going onto the planet of the cavemen. Here's an interesting factoid. There was supposed to be more dinosaurs in the movie. There was a dinosaur sequence, but it got deleted.
Yeah, couldn't afford it or something.
No, it was there.
Oh, right, it got deleted. It got on the cutting room floor, basically. Yeah.
They deleted the sequence with the dinosaur.
Oh.
I know, right? I want a dinosaur in this. I want it to be like a dino planet.
They got rid of the dinosaur, but they kept the massive blow-up doll walking around.
I know! The weird Ray Harryhausen boobied blow-up doll robot.
It has, nipples that look like machine guns. You know, like the Austin Powers.
Yes, that stayed, but the dinosaur didn't. Are you thinking, if you're going to do Ray Harryhausen, dinosaur is the ultimate tribute. How that got deleted, I don't fucking know. All right, so, and as usual at this point, and this is actually quite sad at this point. So Stella and Elle, again, basically Stella and Elle go on the trek, Acton stays on the ship because he always fucking does. Right? Because holy hell.
And he's agoraphobic, is that? He's like, you can't leave the ship.
I can't leave the ship. This is my home. I don't like weird places. And obviously, you're seeing a little bit of a pattern with some of these things. So, you know, Stella Star gets kidnapped by the cavemen.
Mm.
But L, something bad happens to L.
Yeah.
L gets beaten to a pulp.
Those cavemen were so bloody aggressive. I was like quite scared by that scene.
Ripped apart. So L is gone now. He's gone. There is no. He's not coming back. He's been demolished. And then this is the moment. After when Stella gets kidnapped and about to be eaten alive by cavemen, David Hasselhoff.
How late does he come into the movie? Top billing as well.
Top billing.
Maybe because of Knight Rider and stuff like that, but like...
But he comes in an hour into this movie. Like an hour and a bit into this movie, and he has top billing. It's ridiculous.
I've got a clip of him.
Yes, please.
Where he introduces himself.
Please.
You put yourself in great danger just to save me. Where are you from?
My name is Simon.
Simon.
I'm the only survivor from the wreck of an Imperial mission.
Oh, he is the man from the pod.
I love that he's called Simon. Isn't that a very sci-fi kind of like...
Here's the thing, though. He's called Simon when he's not a prince. When he's a prince, he's called Prince Simone. It's ridiculous, right? But, because he's revealed that he's actually the son of the Emperor, right? Here's an interesting fact. Do you know at the very beginning he's wearing a mask?
Yeah.
For no fucking reason. There is a reason. But it's not...
Energy mask.
He says an energy mask, which is... That's bollocks. That's bollocks. There's an actual reason why, okay? So, so David Hasselhoff got sick on set from food poisoning. So the one with the mask is actually a body double.
Right.
So they could film half the movie, right?
I did wonder why it seemed so forced, the fact that he had to explain the energy mask in that scene, like, you know, when he took it off.
Mm.
It was just like, no, it's an energy mask. It's like, there's not much energy to go around, you know, so I need to put it back on. But it was like... Because, you know, it just seemed like, I'll have to force this line in to explain the mask.
It does feel, like, random why he's wearing a mask in the first place and why it needs to be explained.
Because he doesn't wear it again.
He never wears it again. If it's an energy mask, it provides him with extra strength or something, he'd wear it all the goddamn time.
Mm.
He never puts it back on. Although, apparently, he wasn't the only one who got food poisoning.
God, what were they feeding them? What was in the buffet?
Well, David Hasselhoff's bout of onset food poisoning was well documented. Caroline Monroe also got food poisoning. Had a close save with gastric distress, which she revealed in an interview with Phantasm in 1993. And this is what she said. In one scene, I needed the bathroom so bad, I thought, it's a good job I'm wearing a plastic suit over my bikini, if you know what I mean.
Oh, that's dropped a level in sexiness, hasn't it?
1,000%. So in the bits where she's wearing, like, the bikini, but, like, the weird plastic suit, she might be that eager to poop in it. So... it's so stupid. So they find Prince Simone, the prince, the son of the Emperor of the Galaxy, and say, oh, we were supposed to find you. So this, and then he reveals randomly, oh, it's like, because Acton finally leaves the ship and goes and says, like, oh, wait a minute, we still need to find the Emperor's planet. It's like, this is the one we're looking for. It's like, oh, really? Oh, that's it. And then Acton comes in with a lightsaber, beats up a literal lightsaber, beats up a bunch of cavemen, and then goes into an underground lab for some reason, and then goes and does the whole bloody thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the rest of the movie is just kind of just like the Count said, oh, you found my lair, but don't worry, because I'm still beaten, ha 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 ha. I know. Yeah,
the Count, like, it's just too many good lines.
So many good. Do we have one near the end?
I have this.
Now let's give the Emperor a great reception. Put in use a mightiest weapon, the Doom Machine. Send it off towards the Emperor's capital world.
and destroy the Emperor's Imperial Planet!
Yeah! Fantastic. And then the ending. What do you think of the ending? The ending feels like it's a rush job.
Yeah. I do like the explosion, where the count just takes the full force of the explosion.
Yes!
I've got a good clip for that as well.
Do it!
So,
it's brilliant. There we go. There we go.
He just takes it on the chin. He's like, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm just going to take this explosion. I this is my home. I'm just going to... It's going to absorb this explosion.
I love it.
And because they're all fleeing.
Yeah.
He's like, no, stay with me. Stay with me and die here.
Nah, bollocks. Bollocks to that, mate. And yeah, so the way this is kind of counteracted is very rushed. It's because when our heroes are basically stranded by these weird Ray Harryhausen robots in the middle of the lab, the Emperor just comes in out of fucking nowhere because of a distress signal. Says, like, oh, we found you. Oh, we need to leave now because of whatever. And this is the most bullshit thing ever. He says, I have the ability to slow down time. Like, good to know. This would have been useful a lot fucking sooner. Oh, my God.
Doesn't he say, I think that he tries to, like, cover for himself, like, by saying, but it is dangerous. So, like, I can't use it all the time.
Yeah. Because this is like, basically. Like, you say, like, oh, if I did this all the time, it would be catastrophic. Mm. But at the same time, it's like, dude, if you could slow down time, we could have solved so many problems. It's like, say, we've only got 3 minutes. It's like, these 3 minutes will now feel like 15 minutes. It's like, this is such, like, a way to pad out the movie because they didn't plan it out better.
Yeah,
I kind of love when he comes in and just says, don't worry, I'm slowing down time.
I've got it covered.
It's all covered. Covered, mate. And then by this point, they go there, they attack the count. The count explodes. Blah, 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 blah. Whole thing. Boom. End of the movie.
Yeah. And then you get this.
Well, it's done. It's happened. The stars are clear. The planets shine.
My God.
We've won.
Well, good.
Oh, some dark force, no doubt, will show its face once more.
He's really earning his 10,000 here.
The wheel will always turn.
It's a sequel bait.
But for now, it's calm.
Yeah, for now.
And for a little time, at least. We can rest.
Oh my God. Brilliant.
It's almost like you want to have a tear coming down your face because he's so beautiful.
The one solitary tear. It's also a little bit sequel bait because he's always saying, for now. There's no evil for now. Star Crash 2, The Return of the Evil.
I mean, Christopher Plummer's voice is amazing, and that's why he can be like a narrator to a lot of stuff. Because he just sounds so great, doesn't he? Like,
oh, 1,000%. He's one of those people where, you know, do you know, like, it's like a top 20 list of people who want to read your eulogy. Christopher Plummer would totally be something like that. Yeah, 1,000%. His voice is like butter, and it's so bizarre that he's in this movie. Just so many reasons. It's fantastic by the end of it. Because, look, at the end of the day, we've already ranted so much about this movie as it is, to the point that you might think we kind of love it and kind of hate it. And I think we do. I think the review of this whole movie is, I love it and I hate it at the same time.
Mm.
It's not, per se, frustrating too much. I think the only bits I'm frustrated with are how slow it is halfway, so like a bit. But when you're in the thing and you read like the backstory, like I've thrown some facts at you and everything else, you're thinking, my God, I'm surprised you were able to pull this off, let alone be a Star Wars ripoff. Let's actually introduce the segment we've already been doing on videos. Let's put it right here, right now. Let's do this. So,
the trashometer.
Yes.
Trashometer.
Yeah, because now we have to include the trashometer on the podcast because the like this won't be a video, will it?
It won't be a video.
No, so we have to rank all our films. And yeah, so we will be introducing the trashometer into every podcast.
Fantastic. So just for those who are unaware what the trashometer is, on the, in our videos that we've put up on the channel, which is a trash tapes YouTube channel, we have done something called trashometer, which is where we kind of grade whether it's a where the movie we're watching is pure trash as an enjoyment or boring or downright terrible.
Yeah.
So
we got torture right at the top of the scale, haven't we?
Torture is the very top of the scale.
Yeah.
Which is we're almost angry by it. It is horrible. We don't ever want to watch it again. It's the worst. The only movie that's topped that is basically Street Fighter the movie.
Yeah, which is about 95% trash, wasn't it? Like that is definitely torture.
That was horrendous.
Yeah.
Then we got just below that. Too trashy.
Yeah.
Now, too trashy basically means that it got to a point there were some frustrating moments, but we did enjoy the movie overall, but it was a bit too frustrating. Then we have trash, which is just a sweet spot. It's the mwah. It's things like barbed wire. It's things like The Room. It's things like Miami Connection, where it just hits the mwah, the sweet spot.
Yeah, the way I think of the trashometer is like, the reason we call it that, it's a bit like a thermometer, isn't it? Because you get the mind like below zero.
Yeah.
And you get like, when it's too high, it's too hot. Like,
yes.
So it's kind of like you want it to be around about the middle to be good. It's a strange ranking system.
We're kind of wanting it to be room temperature.
Yeah.
Right. Then you go below that, and that's a tiny bit trashy, where we don't actually think, we actually didn't think it was trashy enough. It could have gone, it could have been more trashy, more enjoyable. And then tame, which is actually, it's kind of more boring than anything else. Or it wasn't as fun, really. But not like in an angry way, just like, well, it's a bit nothing.
I know. So this is an interesting one to put on the trashometer. So,
yes.
Let's talk about it.
Okay, so I think I have mine in mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I enjoyed the hell out of this movie, but at the same time, I also really got frustrated with all the slow travelling.
I know, that's why it's tricky to rank, because if it didn't have some of the great stuff, it would be tame, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I actually think it's a bit too trashy, and the reason why is because I got frustrated at the 7 to 10 minute scenes of them travelling, looking at the giant space church and travelling through the planets and just staring blankly as Christopher Plummer's just talking. I'm thinking, Christ, do something. Actually physically do something. Like, I don't know, you could literally cut out like half an hour of this movie and you'd still have the plot.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of filler in there. And it's like, and also I think it's too trashy because it's too sexy.
It's a bit too sexy for what it's trying to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's trying too hard at some point. And if it wasn't for the American producers saying, oi, she needs to cover up more, she would have just been literally
bra and pants the whole way through.
And even that's the thing, that's even more sexy than someone like Barbarella, Queen of the Galaxy. She was at least wearing like a top and hot pants.
Mm.
You know, there was at least something that was covering her cleavage. This was bare. So yeah, I think we agree. It's too trashy.
Yeah.
It's not torture.
No, because we did enjoy a lot of it.
Yeah.
There's just some bits that were just too much.
It's just a bit too much.
Yeah.
But this is then... So it'd be too trashy then.
Yeah.
Perfect. I think that'd be... So basically, it's about 75%.
Yeah.
75%. Well done, everybody. Woo! Fantastic. So that's how... That was Star Crash. That was the end of the episode. I felt like this was a long episode. We had a lot to talk about, though.
Yeah.
So yeah, so the next episode we're gonna do, like we won't usually tease it, but the next episode would technically be our second year anniversary.
Yeah,
so we got a special one for you. We're not gonna give it away. We'll tell you about it next time. But what I would like you to do is, because we're doing the soft reboot, if you're hearing this for the first time, thank you guys very, very much for listening to this, especially since we're doing this new reformatting stuff where it's a little bit loosey-goosey, but also a little bit structured, a little bit with voice, like the whole mixing soundboard is beautiful stuff.
I know, it saves time in editing, but also it's kind of funny because, and it's kind of gives a different entertaining vibe because you can hear us reacting to these clips as they're happening.
Yeah.
Whereas if it was done in post-production, we wouldn't be reacting to what... We'd have to put them in afterwards and insert them and then make it fit, you know, like that. But now you're hearing us react directly as it's happening. Like.
And plus, you get to hear it nice and well, the same kind of bullshit, in all clear colour how we used to do it before, right? So, brilliant. We have all that sorted out. But obviously, we have the new sort of formats. Thank you very much for that. If you haven't subscribed to a few other things, if this is the first time you're hearing us, thank you very much for subscribing. But if you want to share this episode, you just stumble across this episode, don't forget to like subscribe to the podcast. So you can subscribe to us by following us on Spotify, iTunes, there's Buzzsprout, there's all this kind of stuff. And we're really sort of building up our library slowly but surely. And eventually, some of the old episodes will be up on YouTube.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you don't, and also YouTube, we're also on YouTube now, so there is a Trash Tapes YouTube channel which will just be like videos, exclusive little videos, old episodes, reactions of terrible movies. Like we have things like What Is This, we have like old episodes of podcast, we have all that kind of stuff ready, up and ready. And we also got the Trashometer up there so you guys can follow what we were talking about before. But yeah, and yeah, so don't forget to subscribe on that, subscribe on all things, and thank you very much for joining us. So I won't tell you what's happening next time, but it's a corker. I can't wait. And
the anniversary ones have to be special, so at least you know that it's going to be a really special movie, like a really special cult movie.
It's going to be huge. It's going to take over your mind. You can't wait. So, right, so until next time, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.